The soldiers win active duty, right? Because they get to learn how to hunt and fish, which will help prevent them from kind of falling down this little, this rabbit hole of depression or anxiety or whatever symptoms you kind of get when you get out of the military, right? The veterans get to get into something, gives them a new mission, something they can do where they can find a lot of purpose in it. The military, like, gets, like, our Fort Bragg crew frequently doing drop zone cleanup events, right, where they're planting native seeds to restore quail habitat, turkey habitat, whitetail habitat on Fort Bragg that they can go hunt. So Fort Bragg benefits because now our drop zones are cleaned up and we have less paratrooper injuries. Like, conservation benefits because now there's more wild bobwhite quail in the world.
Hello, and welcome to the new Mission Career Transition Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Caprellian. We interview service members that transition to new careers, DoD representatives, and civilian HR professionals to provide you with lessons learned you won't get in a transition class and to help you transition with confidence. On this episode, we have Trevor Hubbs, the Executive Director of the Armed Forces Initiative, which is a subcomponent of the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nonprofit organization. We also have Garrett Robinson, who is a SkillBridge intern with the Armed Forces Initiative. They're going to talk about what the Armed Forces Initiative does to help transitioning service members, connecting them with a network that focuses on developing skills in hunting and angling and fishing, but all the other things that this organization does. Plus, we're going to get some insight in what it means to work within a nonprofit organization. You'd be surprised. Some of the skills that you develop as a range OIC or RSO are very applicable. So stay tuned. Trevor Hubbs and Garrett Robinson, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Very interested in sharing some great information about the organization that you're both a part of. And I'll tell you, it speaks something near and dear to my heart as a kid that grew up in a relatively urban area, but had a father and some of his friends that really kind of took me out hunting when I was younger and really kind of opened my eyes regarding environmental conservation, hunting, the relationship between the two, what an ecosystem really is. You know, hopefully we get into how that can maybe be somebody's purpose in the future as they're preparing to transition. But before we get to that, I certainly want the listeners to understand who they're listening to. And so I'm going to ask both of you kind of where your background is. Trevor, if you could start off telling us where you grew up, how you joined the military, and generally speaking, what you did in the military.
Yeah, sure. So I grew up in Southern Illinois, and I'm always kind of hesitant to introduce myself that way because it doesn't matter if I say Southern Illinois, people always think Chicago. So I kind of preface it by kind of listing like seven cities that I was closer to than Chicago. It's like St. Louis, Memphis, Tulsa, Louisville, Knoxville. Like, it's just about, I was 7.5 hours from Chicago, guys. Yeah, I grew up down there, always hunted, always fished. Father, uncles, brothers, everybody, it's just kind of the way of life. I entered the military after high school, joined the U.S. Army Infantry, first on the active duty side, and then on the transition to the Illinois National Guard before I got out. And I was a ROTC instructor after that last 2 years at Eastern Illinois University. Really enjoyed it. One of those things that nobody's kind of excited they get the ROTC job, especially when you're an infantry NCO. Like, you want to go yell at privates at Fort Benning. You don't necessarily want to go to some college. But no, it was a great opportunity for me. I got my undergraduate degree there at no cost while I was working full time. And yeah, I got to influence a bunch of young officers that, yeah, it was really great. And then I got out of the Army in 2016.
Garrett, what about yourself?
Yeah, so I grew up in southern Pennsylvania, good old Amish country, Pennsylvania, and then joined the Marine Corps in 1997, retiring this year from the Marine Corps. So I'm actually doing my a SkillBridge internship with Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, and specifically the Armed Forces Initiative. My service was with the assault amphibian vehicles. I was a assault amphibian operator, but retiring as a master gunnery sergeant, so really not doing so much of the driving around, hanging out in a vehicle type of stuff, more of the desk duty type of thing the last several years of my career. But so I don't have a thing that I'm doing after the military yet at this point. That's why I'm doing the internship and hoping to get into the outdoor space and outdoor conservation space on the nonprofit side. You know, just pick an organization because there's a lot of them out there. BHA just happens to be one of them. Ideally, get a job with BHA. But and that's kind of the general gist of who I am.
That's great. And so we've got two different perspectives, right? So Trevor, you're the executive director of the Armed Forces Initiative, which is, and we'll talk about the relationship between what is Armed Forces Initiative and what is Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Garrett, you have the SkillBridge experience. So we get two different perspectives, but very applicable to the audience here. So thanks for the overview, but let's just get into it. What is Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, and what do they do? What's the mission and overall vision?
Yeah, so Backcountry Hunters and Anglers seeks to ensure North America's outdoor heritage of hunting and fishing in a natural setting through education and work on behalf of public lands, waters, and wildlife. And if you couldn't tell, I just basically read that off the website because I don't have it memorized. Because that, when it comes to transitioning, I used to memorize everything coming from an airborne infantry unit. Like, you got to know the Ranger Creed, you got to know the Airborne Creed, you got to know the Soldier's Creed at all times, and the real world isn't like that, so I don't really memorize anything anymore. But basically what Backcountry Hunters and Anglers does is it's an advocacy nonprofit for public lands, public waters, and public wildlife. So while you'll have Ducks Unlimited and Delta Waterfowl that are specifically focused on wetland restoration, waterfowl habitat, things like that, you'll have Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation that's specifically interested in Rocky Mountain elk restoration. Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is more of a generalist. Right, it protects the places that all these things live, whether that's, you know, kind of short grass prairie in eastern Montana or, you know, mangrove habitat in southern Florida. Public lands and waters that everybody can go recreate on is our bailiwick. That's what we do.
And what was the genesis of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers?
Yeah, so it's interesting. It's actually seven people around a campfire in Oregon in 2004, just kind of talking about, oh, well, we can't go here anymore because we lost access to this spot to go hunting. Oh, man, that reminds me of this. I can't go hunting here. And then just throughout really one conversation with a bottle of whiskey, they just decided, like, yeah, there's a lot of groups for specific species, but there's not one group that's protecting the places where all these species live, right, that everybody can access. Mm. So, and two of those seven members were veterans, one Navy veteran and one Army veteran who was broadly kind of recognized as the founder. Yeah, so they started in 2004, just in Montana, as their kind of initial space. Started their 501c3 and slowly have been expanding to now we're in 49 states, 3 Canadian provinces, and we're just missing Hawaii. We have members in Hawaii, we just don't have an established chapter in Hawaii.
Wow. So you've gone international. It's not just national, but there are chapters in various states to cover down in certain locations. Is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, absolutely. And so what's interesting about it is if you look at like the Ducks Unlimited model is each state or each individual chapter has its own 501c3 license, right? Which means so like where I grew up at Southern Illinois Ducks Unlimited, that money only goes to Southern Illinois projects. Right, which is cool, but see, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers has one 501c3 license, and we do that intentionally so that we can pool resources from the whole membership to throw large sums of money and effort at things of national or even international attention. So, for example, in Wyoming, we had an issue pretty recently about corner crossing, which is going from one piece of public land to another piece of public land, and it's like a gray area. We can get into it later if you really want to, but essentially we were able to throw a couple $100,000 towards this issue because we have membership all over and I'm not restricted to just Wyoming money, right? I can pull money from New York, Vermont, California from our membership because we have that one 501c3 license.
I'm not even going to start off with like, what are the tax liability implications and how do you manage the legality aspects of 501c3? Maybe we'll get to that in a little bit later, but the thing that I understand was Ducks Unlimited, because that's what I did as a kid. And I saw the contribution. I actually had no idea it was a separate 501c3 just for the state though. Mm-hmm. And so interesting. You have a very broad aperture on the things that you handle. What kind of programs or services does BHA provide?
Yeah, so we have four main programs that we really get into. We have the collegiate program, which is focused on kind of mentoring the youth or building those young hunters and anglers, because the goal is creating conservationists, right? It's creating a demographic, a group, a tribe, a community of people that are not only buying hunting and fishing license, they're not only recreating on these public lands and waters, but they understand why they're doing so and all the pieces that make public lands and waters happen, right? So, like, where does the dollars from their hunting license go? What is the Pittman-Roberts Act? What is the Dingell-Johnson Act? Where all of this kind of funding pieces comes together that you can just park in this parking lot and then go hike for 30 miles in the Bob Marshall Wilderness, and it's all free. It's all yours, right? So then we have a Hunting for Sustainability program, which is about, it focuses a lot on cooking and what to do after you've gone fishing or hunting. And it's more focused on groups that may not have traditional access to that. So like yourself, if you grew up in a very urban area, our Hunting for Sustainability groups puts these clinics on in, where'd they go last year? They went to Portland, they went to New York, they went to Atlanta, these kind of urban centers where people may not have traditional usage for public lands, public waters, public wildlife, and kind of teach them, hey, this is how you break down a deer, and this is what meat looks like, and this is what recipes you can make with it, or this is how you go to Central Park and catch panfish, and this is how you can use that to cook for your family, or foraging with mushrooms, all kinds of things. Just the goal of that isn't necessarily making new hunters and anglers. Like, if people go to one of these clinics, we're not expecting them to become a lifetime hunter just from that, you know, hour experience. But we are expecting them to have a little bit more knowledge when they go to the ballot boxes that next polling season, right? So they're not just blindly voting against something, the hunting and angling, because they don't have experience with it.
Yeah. You're giving them a depth of understanding of,
exactly,
of conservation, probably from an angle they never thought they would broach into that subject.
Sure. The next one is stewardship. So that's a really broad one. Stewardship just means any kind of habitat or access work. So like pulling a lot of old fences all across the West, because everybody had a sheep ranch or a cattle ranch or a goat ranch, and a lot of them aren't really being used anymore. So what BHA does is go in and we pull those down. I think we've cleared like 60 miles of fence just in Colorado this year. And when this airs, I'm going to get a call from Brittany in Colorado, and she's going to correct me on how many miles of fence she's pulled down. But basically, that's anything that's improving habitat, improving access. We have a big project in North Carolina right outside of Fort Bragg that's actually happening this weekend. It's like a $50,000 access project to this river that's being used by thousands of soldiers, sailors, airmen. It's going to be a good one. And then the last project, because kind of the newest, is the Armed Forces Initiative program. And that's the piece that I run.
Okay, so what is the Armed Forces Initiative?
Yeah, so the Armed Forces Initiative basically just serves the military community within backcountry hunters and anglers. So do you want me to kind of go into the origin and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay, perfect. Well, I know we have time constraints, and I don't want to be the only guy talking this whole time. But, at the Armed Forces Initiative in 2018, BHA puts out a kind of annual survey. They do every year, but in 2018 was the first time they asked, are you a member of the military? Are you a veteran, reserve, National Guard, all that stuff? And what was interesting is 12% of the general BHA membership fit into that military community, right? Whether they're veteran, active duty, National Guard, reserves, whatever. That's interesting because depending on what survey you look at, only between like 4% and 7% of the general U.S. population fits into that bucket, right?
Yeah.
So somehow BHA was doubling the national average without trying, without really looking at it. So that's when I came in. I was already a BHA member at that point, but that's when they reached out to me and about six other people that were veterans, that were members, that were kind of active. And we really dug into this kind of military opportunity, or whatever you want to call it. And we learned a whole bunch of stuff on why BHA members join the military, or military members join BHA. But the most interesting thing we learned is of the 12% that were military members, half of those members were already in a volunteer leadership position, whether in their state or organizing trail cleanups or access projects or fundraisers. Like, they were our most active volunteers. So end of 2018, the BHA Board of Directors votes to start a military, a military-focused program to kind of enhance this area of their membership, which is a no-brainer. Like, if these are our most active volunteers, how do we get more of them? So that's when me and these six other volunteers really got involved and tried to look at what does a military-focused program look like when it comes to conservation, what can we do, how would we organize it, all that stuff. 2019, we were able to get quite a bit of funding, and in 2020, we launched our first event, which was a mule deer hunt in eastern Montana just for veterans with for 18 people, just kind of get our feet wet, see what the world is about. Since then, I've come on BHA full-time as the director of the Armed Forces Initiative, and the other six people are now on our board of directors for the Armed Forces Initiative, and now we're in 46 states, and we have active clubs on 26 active duty military installations with about 14,000 members.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty big. So if I can just restate it to make sure I understand what the Armed Forces Initiative is, it sounds like creating a consortium of individuals that were already active hunters, active anglers, prior service military, veterans that were already doing things conservation related, but essentially kind of energizing them. And you probably provide resources to help them do the things that they were already doing, but better. Is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, that's about half right. And, that's completely my fault. So you're spot on. That's kind of where we started, was people that were already hunting and fishing, and in this kind of research on what we could provide to the military community through this, the Armed Forces Initiative. Our vision is, we've settled on a vision, and we try and do three things with each of our events. But our vision is to provide members of the military community with all the knowledge, experience, passion needed to be fully operational as hunters and anglers in the forest, on the water, and as conservation stewards for habitat and wildlife. So the three things that we do these trips, right? We call them events, dual skills camps. There's a bunch of different words. I'm not a marketing guy, so nothing has a fancy term to it. That's what I'm hoping Garrett will help me out with. We do these events. I think we have 136 planned this year. We're about halfway done. But basically, we take veterans, active duty military, National Guard, out in their local community. So North Carolina, we'll do North Carolina events. Our Fort Bragg chapter will do Fort Bragg events. Camp Pendleton events. To take them out, could be a day-long trip, could be a three-day-long trip. But we try and get them into public lands and waters, right? We call this like short-term medicine, whatever you want to call it. It's, let me completely immerse you in this experience, whether it's hunting or fishing, whatever, trapping. Like, let me teach you how to go do these things. Hey, this is how we're going to go hunt mule deer. This is the gear you need. This is strategy, tactics, just kind of basics of how you can go hunting and fishing, right? So like on Fort Bragg, they may be focused on, hey, here's where you go hunting on Fort Bragg. Here's how you read the training calendar to know where you can and cannot hunt this week, right? But it's all about how to hunt and fish is that first step. The second one is we want to engage with a local community. So that's why we try and keep it to state or regional events. So if you do an event in like Louisiana, we're trying to maybe keep all Louisiana, maybe allow some Southern Arkansas, East Texas, but kind of keep a community. And the reason for that is if I can teach everybody how to hunt and fish, and I can give them a group of people with shared life experience so far and a common interest in learning how to hunt and fish, the likelihood that they leave this event and continue to hunt and fish is very high. Because that's the goal, is that they go to our event and then they no longer need to rely on another nonprofit or anybody else to take them into the woods again. They have all the skills and experience necessary to go do that. And then the third piece that we try and accomplish at every event is we try and give our participants a new mission, and that mission is conservation. So which really ties into just kind of the military experience in general, is you go from, like, I was in for 8 years, and you go every day 8 years knowing, like, you have a mission bigger than yourself, right? Like, everything you're doing matters to an entire country of people. Like, it's a very important job. And then you get out and you're, you know, a tax attorney or small business owner, whatever, it doesn't have the same kind of grand or larger mission. You're not serving a larger purpose anymore, right? And that could be a struggle for a lot of people. So the interesting thing with hunting and angling is we kind of have that built-in mission. That mission is conservation. So I'd like them to leave with just a little bit of enough knowledge to be dangerous to where they can go into a Department of Natural Resources meeting, or they can write their congressman, write their senator and say, as a veteran, I like this wildlife area and the opportunities available on that wildlife area, and this is why. Because for whatever reason, when you say, as a veteran, I think this, it means just a little bit more than when you say, as a hardware store employee, I think this, politically at least. So if we have that one card to play, I'd like them to play it for conservation. Does that make sense? Kind of rambled there.
No, it makes perfect sense. I think it's a great program because it talks on a lot of the different things that we've already had some of our guests talk about, the loneliness, the lack of a network, a lack of sense of purpose, and you're fulfilling a lot of those needs while also that sense of purpose contributing to something very good, something very important, which is wildlife conservation of the environment.
If I can add real quick on that topic, because, you know, not that Trevor's underselling it, but, you know, I'm coming at this from the volunteer perspective, right? And I'm, as Trevor will tell you, I'm extremely passionate about what we do in this program. I came to Backcountry Hunters and Anglers very organically. And then when I, you know, years ago, and then when the program started in 2020, you know, I saw that and was like, you know, I absolutely want to jump on board on this. And Trevor talks about we want these individuals to come to our events to walk away and be able to function on their own in this space. So the something he says all the time is, we don't want to give you a experience of a lifetime. We want to give you a lifetime of experiences. Being able to connect with our veteran community, because we all know, you know, in this community how important it is for us to be together. Right, we speak a different language, we have a different shared experience, and you know, we need to be around each other because that's where we feel safe, that's where we feel comfortable, that's where we feel accepted, and where we can speak about things that, you know, each other will understand. You add in this hunting and fishing, you know, just the outdoor piece of it, there's a whole, it just brings a different layer to it. And I know from a personal perspective, like, I feel most at peace in the outdoors. Being able to be involved in this program, to witness what that does for people. And Trevor can tell you some of the experiences he's had at some of our camps with people that weren't involved, you know, like I am with the program, but found about this camp and came in and participated in the impact that those 3 days, that one day, you know, whatever it was, has made on them. And, you know, the lasting impact that for those that continue to be involved with us, that has made. So I just want to throw that in there, you know, just from a, you know, a volunteer perspective here. I, you know, I'm as passionate as I am and as involved as I am with this project, this program, because of these things that the program is doing that Trevor is spearheading.
Now, and thanks for the clarification. I mean, I know I was going to ask you about the skill bridge and other like employment and volunteer opportunities, but let's just say we've got a listener out there or a group of listeners and they're like very interested now. How do they become involved in AFI?
Right. So there's a lot of ways you can get involved in AFI, and I'll kind of cap this with the skill bridge stuff if that works for you, Chris.
Absolutely.
If you want to get involved with AFI, like, you don't have to be active duty. You don't have to be a veteran. You can be an active duty or you can be a veteran. You can be a reservist. You can be in the National Guard. You can be a Gold Star family member, because we also are open to Gold Star family members. And we have a couple people that are participating in some upcoming events that we have in New England from Gold Star family. And so that's always great to be able to reach out to them, because they are people that we need to take care of for sure. We have AFI liaisons at the state level, and they're who run our state programs. All of that information is listed on our landing page on the BHA website, and you can reach out to any one of those state liaisons and ask them how you can get involved. If you are active duty and you are on an installation and you want to see if you have an installation club that is there, again, go to that same website and go to our leader. It's on our leader section of our landing page. And you can find what existing installation clubs that we have, and you can reach out to those, the president of the board for that club. If nothing exists in any of those locations, you can, on our landing page, there's a leader sign up, volunteer leader sign up form, and you can go in there, fill out that application. It comes to, you know, the, you know, to Trevor and the AFI board, and they will review those and reach out to you and interview and see if you, you know, if you fit the bill and if it's something that you want to do after you talk to them to be a leader at the state level or at, to establish a installation club wherever you are. So there's a lot of ways that you can get involved, you know, through that. You know, just perusing our events link, if you go again on the landing page, there's an events link, and that is specific to just AFI events if you do it through our that landing page. And you can see all of the events that are available in your region or throughout the country. Some of the stuff that we offer for events are, you don't have to be, you know, local to it. You know, you can go attend those events regardless of where you are or where you currently live. So there's a plethora of opportunities available to you if you want to get involved. And whether it's you want to be heavily involved in the stewardship work, whether you want to be involved in policy type work, I recently represented the Armed Forces Initiative and my local chapter of BHA proper, the Capital Region chapter in DC, for a fly-in with the Land and Water Conservation Fund Coalition, speaking, you know, specifically about Land and Water Conservation Fund initiatives, you know, and funding. But I, as Trevor spoke, you know, that veteran perspective, right? So I was able to speak to, you know, six different legislators from the state of Virginia about the importance of public lands and continuing to fund public lands from a veteran perspective. And I did that as a volunteer. So I was able to go up there for, you know, 2 days, meet with these individuals and their staffs and talk to them about these things and have a really good conversation about the importance of it. So it's really, you know, create your own adventure, how much you want to be involved in the program. So I hope that answers the question of how to get involved.
Absolutely, it does. As Trevor said at the very beginning, the AFI, or the Armed Forces Initiative, is one of the four types of programs, but I bet there's a, it sounds as though there's certainly a relationship between all four, i.e., part of a chapter of the Armed Forces Initiative at a certain location, but certainly seeing opportunities for engagement or collegiate level engagement or stewardship, that it just creates the network that overall helps a conservation effort. I mean, is that accurate?
I would say it is. So it's very much, you know, so we'll use the military vernacular, right? So think about it as a coalition force, right? A CGTF. That's kind of what we are looking at. So you've got, you know, BHA as the overall organization with these four programs underneath it that, you know, could essentially be the branches of the military, right? And we all work together. And then, as we said, there's an international perspective here. So that brings in that, you know, combined joint task force type of mentality. I think that really kind of speaks to that coalition and, you know, how we can all work together as one organization to do these things. And, you know, we don't, you know, stovepipe ourselves. We do reach out to a lot of the other organizations out there, you know, that do this type of work so that we can work together and coalesce our efforts.
It certainly makes more sense in my mind. It seems like as an intern, a SkillBridge intern, a lot of the things that you've been able to do seem very dynamic. I mean, on one part, it's lobbyists. On another part, it's conservation. Another part, it's marketing. I mean, how did you come across this SkillBridge opportunity?
So I came across it simply by, you know, the fact that I'm pretty heavily involved with the program. So I'm actually the first SkillBridge interned for BHA. They just recently, the end of last year, were able to get approved for the program with their memorandum of agreement with DoD SkillBridge. So I was able, timing wise, it worked out perfect with when I was transitioning and able to apply for the program, get accepted, get approved through my command, and then get accepted by BHA. It has provided a lot of opportunity for me to do a lot of different things specific to the work, right? So I'm essentially working as a project manager. So, you know, on the day-to-day work, I'm doing administrative work to help Trevor out, whether it's just kind of monitoring the emails that come in and answering stuff that really he doesn't need to you know, worry himself with, so he can focus on the, you know, the strategic level, if you will. I'm kind of focused on the operational and the tactical level type stuff, events that we're planning, because all of our, you know, installation clubs in our states have to route all of their events through us for approval, and then we post it on the website. Well, I'm doing all the back end work on that for the website. Same thing with any of our written media. I'm working on that kind of stuff as far as getting it posted, not necessarily editing. Trevor kind of handles that. But if stuff comes in that needs to get posted, I'll go ahead and take care of that. I'm working on building, well, not really building, but refining our standard operating procedures that we have, and building out that, because, you know, being a old crusty Marine that from the ops side of the world, you know, standing operating procedures are kind of my bread and butter, right? So I'm working on that as a project that I'm doing. The marketing side I'm involved with. So building out our events and whatnot requires a little bit of marketing work. So we need thumbnails for the event postings and social media, you know, type work that can be used on, you know, the various social media platforms for those individual states and installations. So helping with those types of products. I have the opportunity to sit in on all of our staff meetings. So we have a weekly, you know, all hands staff meeting. I get to participate in that. So kind of be a little bit of a fly on the wall, but also participate from time to time, which is really educational to kind of see how that works, because it's much different than, you know, our staff meetings at, you know, the regiment or the battalion or whatever. Having that experience is always very good. There's other, you know, meetings that happen throughout the week that I'm able to participate in as well. That, again, it's just the educational piece for me, you know, in looking to the, you know, outside world, if you will, the world outside of uniform, outside of the uniform. So it's kind of very broad brush. The nice thing is that Trevor will he tells everybody that interviews for this, because we are interviewing, you know, a lot of different people for the upcoming iterations of the internship. Whatever your interest is, like for me specifically, it's I just want to be involved in this nonprofit, you know, space, this specific niche of the nonprofit space. So I'm trying to get a very broad brush, you know, experience. So I'm doing a lot of different things. But if your interest is specifically operations, you know, Trevor can put you in something that's a little bit more refined to the operations side of things. We have a marketing, you know, and communications section that speaks the voice of BHA. You could get involved in that type of work through your internship. Sales, you know, we have a whole sales piece, so you could get involved in that. So there's a lot of different opportunities that are available. And all this stuff is, again, you know, if you go to the BHA website and go to About BHA Careers, there's ongoing job posting for the Skillbridge internship on there. And it speaks to all the different opportunities that are available. So it's, even though you may not be specifically interested in getting involved in this type of work, there is work involved that you may be interested in, and this provides you the other nice thing is this is a remote opportunity. So it provides you an opportunity to work in a remote environment and start learning some of these skills. The other piece is, like, you know, you have to have kind of a training plan, right, for Skillbridge. So, you know, not only am I getting the opportunity to participate in a lot of these meetings, you know, as a unpaid staff member through an internship, but I'm also getting the opportunity to present information as well. So that's like my project, being that standard operating procedures piece, is, you know, working on the refining that. I'm doing briefs, you know, I had an initial brief as to what my project was and, you know, the goal of the project. And then, you know, in progress reviews on that project, and then I'll have a final presentation for my project at the end of my internship. And the nice thing about that is that, one, I'm providing a service to the organization in doing this project. But the takeaway for me is I'm now having various individuals from the, you know, the overall staff, not just the Armed Forces Initiative, you know, folks, that are critiquing my presentations. So, which is helpful. So, you know, me spending 26 years in the Marine Corps, like all I know is the Marine Corps and, you know, the military side of things. And a prime example is my initial presentation. We had the vice president of operations who has no background in the military or understanding of the military other than what the majority of Americans think. And I'm doing my introduction slide of who I am, my background, and that type of thing. And I got done with that. And she's like, I don't understand anything you just said. Right. So that was a very huge takeaway for me, is to understand how to speak to who I am, you know, in the outside world. So that's just one example of like some of the benefits of having these experiences. And you're going to get that anywhere with Scobridge, but, you know, this is just another great opportunity to do it.
Yeah. So you get a very intimate look at a very dynamic 501c3 nonprofit organization or corporation. So many different business operations aspects, right? Like, right. I guess normally we operate within our military occupational specialty, but I mean, the exposure you get to so many different facets of the organization itself is certainly illuminating. My guess is whether you're interested in conservation or you have another calling that is of a nonprofit flavor, going through this SkillBridge program with BHA and the Armed Forces Initiative, the DoD SkillBridge positions, you're going to get a deep dive into what it means to be part of a nonprofit corporation or organization.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And on that note, I know we talked about SkillBridge for this specifically, but there's a possibility we have listeners that already have in their mind that the idea that they might want to work for a nonprofit organization or perhaps start their own. Let's say somebody wants to start a nonprofit corporation. You know, where's the starting point? What are the things that they should consider, particularly the way it's organized and the way it executes?
Yeah, so specifically with a nonprofit, you have to have a purpose statement and bylaws written out. And you can kind of get those anywhere. Most nonprofits make that stuff public. I mean, if you really wanted to, you could go copy and paste Backcountry Hunters and Anglers bylaws, purpose statement, and then go in and change it to, you know, whatever you want to focus on, right? And then you also need to recruit and establish a legal board of directors, the president, secretary, vice president, all that stuff that will actually manage the nonprofit. Then you need to file your articles of incorporation with the federal government and apply for a federal tax exempt status as a 501c3, which could take 6 to 18 months, depending on just how much of a no brainer your nonprofit is, and kind of proving that you are truly a nonprofit.
Now, being a nonprofit, when it comes down to revenue, I mean, we're not in the business of sales, i.e. selling a product, but there are certain advantages of a nonprofit organization. Could you give us an idea of, like, for the programs, particularly the AFI, what are the funding sources that help make AFI work?
Yeah, well, that's a kind of a topic that Garrett and I have been working on I've been working on for a few years, and then Garrett's been helping me here in the past couple months, but you got to remember, in 2021, we were taking 400 people out a year, basically just me and the board of directors, thinking we were killing it. Like, man, nobody's doing better than us. This is amazing. Now we're taking 2,000 people out of here in 46 states. It's the growth has been pretty insane. So as far as funding, that's become probably 60 to 70% of my job. And I'm just hunting down anything. There's a website called Grant Seeker. You kind of get a membership to it and you pay for that membership, but it's just basically a list of a bunch of grants that are out there, and you can sort by, oh, this grant is for the youth education, not for me. This grant is for veterans education, could be for me. And you kind of sort them by there, and then you go through and apply. It's honestly a huge pain point, because, I mean, some of these grants, like the other day, Garrett and I finished it was like 62 pages for a grant proposal. I mean, that's 80 hours of work. Right between the two of us that we put into this grant. And to be fair, we might get $192,000 from it, but we might also get nothing. Then we just wasted 80 man hours, you know? So I haven't figured it out yet. Our goal, or our kind of strategy right now is cast a wide net and hopefully we catch some stuff. Right now, our operating budget is about $80,000 a year. That's what it costs us to run all these events. Then we have, you know, a travel budget. Our insurance is $60,000 a year, just because, and you essentially have to look at us like it's the same insurance that an outfitter would have, except an outfitter is running 20, 30 events a year in one state. We're running hundreds of events in 46 states.
Wow.
It's I've gotten with an insurance company. It's just like, yep, let's just need the basics. Nothing's going to happen. We're only taking out a couple hundred people. No big deal. And then we kind of just immediately started to grow and got dropped by our old insurance company just because it wasn't the right fit. They were more of like a fundraising, like, oh, well, you guys are going to do like silent auctions and raffles and stuff like that. Yeah, totally. We'll insure those events. And then they realized, oh, you're actually taking 15 people, you know, 60 miles from the nearest road to teach them how to elk hunt. That's something we need to look at, right? Like,
yeah.
So got a new insurance company. Everything's been going well, but yeah, that's another huge percentage of Garrett and I's job right now is basically just keeping the insurance company happy, right? Just making sure that, let's say our New England chapter wants to do a rough grouse hunting event in Maine, right? All right. What's your primary, secondary, tertiary medical plans? Where's the nearest hospital? What's your transportation look like? Your communications, making sure one, developing a system so that any volunteer can basically fill in the blanks and come up with everything we need for insurance. And two, then working with our insurance company. So when they have a question, say, hey, did you take 20 guys out into the Maine forest with nothing? Like, no, we did. Here's our medical plan. Here's our evacuation plan. Here's our contact list, our line of communications. Here's all those documents. And you just kind of hand those to the insurance company. And that keeps them happy, or it has so far.
So you mean to tell me that running a range as an OIC or RSO actually helps?
Oh, dude, it's amazing. If you like, it's one of the things that really kind of makes like Garrett's like onboarding a lot easier, and anybody from the military community, is they look at this and they're like, you're calling this like an event plan, but this is a con op. Like, it's the exact, and like, yeah, it is, man. It's the exact same format. I stole it from the 82nd Airborne, and I'm not ashamed to say it. So I got my undergraduate degree from Eastern Illinois University in natural history, right? Then I got my master's in business management, which is kind of like the uglier cousin of business administration, because I don't have to take as much math classes, right? So I don't know how to run a nonprofit. We're just doing our best, like kind of stumbled into this and we're accidentally finding success. So, I mean, it's nothing that I say all that to kind of like to say, if you want to start your own nonprofit, if you're looking at it, it's not necessary. It's not like out of the realm of possibility. If I can figure it out, anybody can figure this out. It's just thinking ahead and using the skills you already have. Like, because essentially what we're planning every time is an airborne infantry operation. We're going to take these known number of people. We're going to drop them into this place that we've only ever seen on the map, right? And then we're going to go conduct a 3-day operation and then come out. Like, that's the same thing we use. I still write op orders. I still do fragos, warnos, all that stuff. And I'm sure it drives some of our guys crazy because the veterans think they were getting ready to be done with that space. And now all of a sudden they're back into the same acronyms, but it keeps the insurance guy off our back, keeps everybody safe. We're going to keep doing it.
Yeah. I hear, like you said, I hear concept of operations was the actual execution of the event. You got like, instead of concept of fires, you've got concept of financing and you got the admin logistics part. I know I'm oversimplifying it, but it seems like a very natural transition if those are some of the problems you're tackling as being part of or leading a nonprofit organization.
It is. I've found it a very natural progression. I mean, to be fair, what I did on the civilian side, I did not have a great transition. Like, I left being an ROTC instructor, and I was actually a security guard for Taylor Swift for $11 an hour for a year before I found my first like real job. And it used to be cool because at the time I kind of tricked myself into thinking I was like Liam Neeson from Taken, but it was reality. I just stood outside a green room while a bunch of rich people had a great time, and I just stood there in a cheap suit. But so after that, went and got my master's degree, got into the business consulting world in like the $5 to $15 million range. So a lot of them were these smaller companies, like 30, 40 employees, mostly in the outdoor or the construction industry. So that's between the military and that, basically all I do is process improvement, procedures, help things run easier. I'm not, like I said earlier, I'm not great at marketing. I don't really generate fancy names or like, that's one of my biggest weaknesses is if you look at like normal BHA, very good at marketing. Like they'll have like a buck beers and like a buck and beers bash or whatever. They're going to talk deer hunting. They're going to have some free beer and they're going to make it this huge event. And it's always got a snappy title. And like, if you look at our events, like South Dakota, it's like Veterans South Dakota Pheasant Hunt. That's the title. I don't know.
I don't know. You're kind of speaking to me.
Yeah, right. I'm doing my best here.
Like we're following the KISS principle. Like just like Khabib said, send location. Yeah. That's all I need.
Our guy down in Texas is like, well, I'm doing a redfish event and I can't come up with any like alliteration or funny words. I'm like, Texas Coastal Redfish Event.
Nice. Done. Yeah. Well, hey, I don't know. Sounds good.
Let's put our effort where we can make the most benefit out of it. Like, and that's the other thing is, we've kicked around hiring a marketing firm. We've kicked around like kind of doing, getting some more professional media services, things like that to kind of boost us. And I think we are going to get to that point of need where we're going to have to do that soon. But it's just so hard for Garrett, me, the other leadership, because we know like, yeah, I can spend 15 grand and get a media editor to throw like a cool promo video together, right? But for 15 grand, I can also do, you know, 30 camps. Right, I can take several hundred people into the backcountry, and you guys can't see me, but I'm looking at my whiteboard right now. It sits on my desk, and Garrett kind of mentioned it earlier, but there is this whole kind of subset to what we're doing as far as like veterans' mental health, right? And I'm not a psychiatrist, not a psychologist, I'm not a doctor at all, but we are kind of one of the few groups that has been invited to kind of Washington, and Garrett's helped represent us on this, to advise, you know, the Department of Interior, Department of Veteran Affairs on what they're calling veterans adjunct outdoor therapy is the official term, which is basically just any therapy that happens outdoors. So we've kind of stumbled into success here to where we're kind of one of the main names in outdoor therapy for the United States. And, anyway, I'm kind of rambling now, but the reason I do this, I look at my whiteboard and I've got 19 tally marks on there. And that's 19 people in the past 3 years that have called, texted, emailed, said, hey, Trevor, I don't want to make it weird, but this event was the reason I didn't kill myself, right? Like, and it's not in so many words. It's different for everybody. Some people send multiple paragraphs and huge letters. And some people, it's just a text like, hey, I was in a real bad spot. And this is helpful. You got to keep doing it. Especially last year. I mean, Garrett's heard the story. Last year, I spent 227 days on the road, just living in my F-150, driving across the U.S., trying to host all these events myself, trying to get leaders trained. And it's a you're sleeping at rest stops. You're pulled over on the side of the road, sleeping in the shady corner of a gas station in your truck. But you get a text like that at 3 a.m, and you're like, all right, got to keep going, you know?
Sounds like a great win on a deployment.
Yeah, well, it just makes it so much easier, and it's a win for everybody, right? Like the soldiers win active duty, right? Because they get to learn how to hunt and fish, which will help prevent them from kind of falling down this rabbit hole of depression or anxiety or whatever symptoms you kind of get when you get out of the military, right? The veterans get to get into something, gives them a new mission, something they can do where they can find a lot of purpose in it. The military gets our Fort Bragg crew frequently doing drop zone cleanup events, right? Where they're planting native seeds to restore quail habitat, turkey habitat, whitetail habitat on Fort Bragg that they can go hunt. So Fort Bragg benefits because now our drop zones are cleaned up and we have less paratrooper injuries. Like conservation benefits because now there's more wild bobwhite quail in the world. Like there isn't really a downside to this other than my insurance costs too much. But.
Yeah, just keep filling out the ORM.
Yeah, that's all you can do, right?
Yeah. Well, good to know it actually pays off for the organization. We're running close to the drop dead time of this recording, so I want to transition to final thoughts. And Garrett, I'll start with you. You know, being in the middle of your transition, you know, you have a very unique perspective. And what are one or two things you want people to think about as they prepare for their own transition?
Probably the biggest thing is pay attention to the transition classes. So and we all kind of like, oh, I got to go do, you know, the transition stuff or whatever. If you're retiring, it's like a week long thing. If you're not, it's a 3-day thing or whatever, right? Take them serious, because they are helpful. Like, I'm glad I took it serious and I learned an awful lot in those classes. There's a lot of resources that they'll give you at those classes that allow you to continue that transition education. Take advantage of those things. Build your LinkedIn profile. A lot of people don't think about how important that is. I didn't think it was important at all. And I'm realizing, you know, over the last couple of months how important it is. And, you know, prime example, I got a cold call yesterday, you know, from a guy who saw my profile, liked what he saw, and said, call me. I want to talk to you about a job at the Pentagon where I just was working for the last 3 years. And that could potentially be an opportunity for me. Because it's been rough, especially with, I've pigeonholed myself a little bit where I want to work in this, you know, niche nonprofit space. And, you know, it can be, it's a little bit difficult. And I've had a lot of rejection. So pay attention to that transition stuff. Take it serious. Take advantage of it because you're going to need it. And then the second thing I would leave people with is have a little bit of tactical patience, right? Use the resources that you've learned, you know, in uniform, and apply them. I mean, this is you're planning an operation, you know, in your transition. We're going to, you know, we'll use some Marine speak. You know, we're going to do an amphibious landing, and success is going to be very much on the planning and preparation for us to, you know, land, you know, online on time center beach. You know, and that online on time center beach is getting a job after you have transitioned out of the military. So take it to heart, all the things you've learned, and just take time to sit down and look at where you need to be and how you're going to get there. And I think you'll be successful.
Thanks for that, Garrett. I appreciate it. Now, Trevor, you've transitioned a little while back and, you know, you've got the benefit of hindsight. So what are one or two things that you want to express to transitioning service members?
I mean, Garrett really nailed it. I would take it a step further. Take $400, go to a resume service that'll also do your LinkedIn, and just let them write it. Spend 2 hours on the phone with them. They're going to come up with something way better than anything you can. Not because you can't do it, but because your head's not in the right space for to just understand civilian language, see what they want to see. Like, I looked at my resume that I just paid $400 for when I did it, and I'm like, well, this is a piece of garbage. But I tell you, I do not apply for a job that I don't get offered an interview because of that resume. Like, it just makes you look good. They know how to speak the language. That would be my first piece of advice, is have a professional do it. Second piece, this is the piece of advice that took me the longest to kind of wrap my brain around, but it was the best piece of advice, especially for, like, if you're getting out as an E6, E7, and you, a lot of your identity is wrapped up, like mine was, and like, oh, I'm an airborne infantryman, paratrooper. Nobody cares, man. Doesn't matter. And I'm not saying that to hurt your feelings. It hurt my feelings a lot, but it is reality. You've got to find a way in these interviews, in these job applications, to express what you did and your responsibility in a way that everybody can understand. And I'm still not great at it. I still... Because I'm very proud of my service. I like what I did. And it's hard to kind of separate who you are from who you were. Like, a big piece of advice that I started doing is, you know, when just even introducing myself, like when my wife's friends told me to say, oh, yeah, you were in the Army, right? And I was like, yeah, I was. Now I am. Now I am just Trevor, or Trevor the project manager, Trevor the business consultant, Trevor the security guard, whatever it is. Like, you've got to mentally disassociate from those, that kind of I don't want to say disassociate from the pride, but a little bit of that boastfulness, I guess, that you get, at least in the infantry community that I saw. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. And thank you for that. I've asked some questions. I feel like we could go on for much longer than this. But for those listeners that maybe have other questions that I didn't ask, or they want to learn more, where can they go?
The biggest thing, just backcountryhunters.org. Just reach out. My last name, Hubs, H-U-B-B-S, at backcountryhunters.org. Shoot me an email. All emails will get answered. They may not get answered very fast, but I do make a point to answer everybody who has questions. email me, reach out on the website, look around. We do a career transition series once a year. Our next one won't be till February of next year, but we do kind of look into that. And if you want to sign up for the Skills Bridge, like unless your resume is just crap, you're getting an interview. Garrett's been a part of 4 or 5 of them. We have 2 more interviews today, right after this, actually. They're very relaxed. I'm going to walk you through what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, give you pointers. Like, it won't be a waste of your time.
Man, that sounds awesome. Man, I can't thank you enough for coming on. You know, sometimes I've got a lot of corporate focus because it's somewhat easily accessible, particularly for those that are retiring and transitioning. And some of that information, it tends to be a lot of what is advertised through on-base transition centers. But the nonprofit realm is just, it seems like a great opportunity to pursue a new purpose and also be involved in something that's very dynamic, kind of like you got to be a jack of all trades, master of none, but you also get to apply, you know, the skills that you learned while you were in the service, like doing an ORM. So, gents, thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Trevor Hubbs and Garrett Robinson have left the virtual studio. It's just me, folks. I don't have my sister here. She had a scheduling conflict, so I'm not going to bob my gums for too long, but I'll let you know I was kind of excited to hear that maybe learning how to do the ORM actually pays off in the civilian world, particularly the nonprofit world, and I'm very thankful that we had Trevor Hubbs and Garrett Robinson come on. I think their organization is at a kind of a proverbial tipping point when it comes to scaling. You know, they keep having growth and participation in the Armed Forces Initiative, and at some point in time, you know, you got to make an investment so that you can continue to keep expanding and providing services to service members. So very excited to hear what comes of the Armed Forces Initiative over the next year. Probably they'll continue to have a lot of growth. A couple of notes that they wanted me to pass on. First, Garrett wanted to express that, you know, he chose a path that was outside of what we'll call the lifelines, outside of the normal GS or military contractor role. And he's excited to do it, but it also comes with some of its own challenges, right? So for him as a master gunnery sergeant with a plethora of experience at headquarters Marine Corps, you know, he'd be an easy fit. There are contractors that are constantly looking out there for you. And if that's what you want to do, that's awesome. You know, go for it. You know, I'm not going to say it's an easy transition, but it sounds like it's slightly easier because you're very well attuned to being able to fill those roles. But going into the 501c3 realm and working for a nonprofit organization, a very different dynamic. But also, that might scratch the itch that you have if that's the thing that you want to do. So again, both gentlemen said that they're very interested in responding to any questions. So you can hit them up on any of the contact information that I put in the episode notes. Last thing that they wanted me to relay that we probably didn't double down enough on was the opportunity to remote work. Some of you are either listening and you're at a site overseas, or maybe you know fellow service members that are working overseas. You know, that's where their permanent duty assignment is. And transitioning from those locations is tough. Or maybe you have a special circumstance where you're very geographically limited. Maybe it's because of your family and you need telework or remote work options. And this might be the perfect fit. If you want to have a very dynamic experience, the same that Garrett is having, this is a great opportunity to actually get reps and sets in being part of a nonprofit organization and being able to work from home, keeping it remote. So again, I implore you, if this is something you're interested in, please check out the Armed Forces Initiative that is part of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. That's Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. This wraps up another great conversation, and thank you much for listening. If you like what you heard, you can support our podcast by giving us a 5-star review. You can follow New Mission Career Transition Podcast on the platform you're listening to now, or any other, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and all the other major podcast applications. You can follow us on Instagram at New Mission CT. That's New Mission Charlie Tango, and we would love to hear your feedback. You can either DM us via our Instagram, or you can send us an email at newmissionct@gmail.com, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can. If you're preparing for your own transition, know that I'm right there with you. So until next time, stay focused.